This podcast is being sponsored by MyComicShop.com. Come visit us at ColdSlitterPodcast.com and then click on the link through our front page to MyComicShop.com. Shop there and keep the podcast going free. And you'll get new releases of comic books delivered right to your door. MyComicShop.com through ColdSlitterPodcast.com. Do it today. The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
Welcome to a Nerd Science episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
Yay!
I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And I'm joined tonight by at PCN underscore dirt on Twitter.
Yay!
We also have at agent underscore 70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
And last but not least, we have at Roddy Cat on Twitter.
Yeah!
Hey, everybody!
And you can find us on our website, theclicknation.com. And you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles podcast, the Fresh Coast Click Podcast, the Click Nation Podcast, Comic Book Reviews, and much more. Follow the Twitter account at The Click Nation. Like our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TheClickNation. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheClickNation. Also on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Add us to your Google circles. Just search for The Click Nation. Make sure to use the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles on your favorite social media websites.
Tweet, tweet.
And a reminder, we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And we also are a member of the Cold Slither Podcasting Network.
You'll be joining us soon.
Soon. And you'll be hearing some announcements coming from the Cold Slither Podcast and Network in the next couple of weeks. So with that, let's see what's going on in the news this week. So there's a rumor that Avengers 3 will be split into two films. Because that's the new thing nowadays.
For God's sake.
Rather than go for three, this will be like 3.1, 0.2, 3.3.
Oh my goodness.
It'd be funny if like they actually did split up into two films and try to make it like the first part would be like Avengers 3 and the second half would be like Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Yeah.
Since they'll be teaming together.
Oh, yeah, at the end, the Guardians come in and just take over or whatever the case may be. Yeah.
You can call like Avengers 3 Infinity Gauntlet. They call Part 2 Guardians of the Galaxy Infinity Gauntlet.
Here's it goes. Somebody's like, wait a minute, we need more help. I know who to call. And then you see Peter Quill pop up on the screen. Yeah.
That'll be interesting.
Next up, we have there's going to be a Batman. Batman gets a limited edition Forever stamp for his 75th anniversary, and a weird looking burger in Hong Kong.
Yeah, they're going crazy with it.
Yeah, they'll be releasing the Forever stamp at New York Comic Con next week. So I'm looking forward to that. The stamps are actually pretty cool. You know, not that anyone here uses much snail mail. But every once in a while, I want to, you know, p- put a stamp on something. I'm looking forward to at least getting a sheet. And they're going to be forever stamps too. So, you know, if you buy this sheet, you know, whenever the price of postage goes up, these will still be good.
Yeah, but not a lot of times they'll just, I mean, specifically with these are for specifically for the collector's item. So.
Nightwing's first episode of a fan-made web series is online to be viewed.
Nobody looked at this, did they?
It looked good from what I saw.
Yeah.
Is that something new or?
Remember? So it was announced a while back, and this is the fruits of that. So.
Okay. It sounded familiar, like I had read or seen something about it a while ago.
Yeah, I think we had talked about it probably a good many episodes ago.
Okay. Saturday morning cartoons are officially dead, if you didn't already know that.
That's not it.
That's what Netflix is for, people.
Yeah. We have lost a staple.
Yeah. Is this because of the...
The dedicated cartoon channels?
No, I was going to say, that one network, the last network that was showing stuff went, decided not going to do it anymore, right?
Well, the CW were the last ones to do it, CW. And we had like old episodes. Of, well, like some version of Yu-Gi-Oh and a couple other things here and there. And I guess they decided I totally forgot what it was, the reason it was behind it. But yeah, I don't know if it had much to do with the dedicated channel because those have been around for a while. So,
All right, X-Men Apocalypse. Supposedly will be the end of the X-Men First Class trilogy.
Did you guys all watch Days of Future Past?
No, not yet.
Me neither. Nope.
Yes.
Wow, only one out of four? Yikes.
I mean, he's the X-Men dude.
I'm an X-Men dude too, but you know, I'm not a fan of these movies.
Yeah.
Me either. I hear it's coming out on DVD, Blu-ray like next week.
Yeah. And it's already out on digital.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not trying to buy it. I may just try to watch it at some point next week.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too.
Okay. Dominic Cooper officially returning as Howard Stark in Agent Carter.
That's pretty cool.
That's good news for the series.
Some consistency.
It makes sense.
Justice League Throne of Atlantis animated trailer was released. So this is the animated movie from the WB's line of, I guess, sort of relaunched, tying together movies following Flashpoint and Justice League, whatever it was called.
War. Doomed?
War?
War?
What is it good
it was
for?
War, right?
Ah! Yeah, War was the last one. Yeah.
I keep saying like, I need to go back and watch War because I only watched it once.
War was alright.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just need to refresh my memory on it.
I liked it better than the most recent one they did. The most recent one they did was the
Arkham Assault
on Arkham. Yeah. And that one got really boring in the middle. So.
Mm. Yeah, I haven't seen that, and I haven't seen Batman and Son, or whatever it's called, Son of Batman.
Oh, that one's pretty good.
I haven't seen that
one. I need to go on my website of choice to
watch right. That. Yar! That's all I got to say about that.
supposedly, there's a rumor that all new X Factor is going to be ending in the near future, and Pietro will be joining an Avengers team to coincide with being in the movie.
He could do both. He's fast enough. Ah!
Yeah. Which would be sad because all new X Factor is one of my favorite X Men books at the moment. But we shall wait and see. White Collar's Tim Decay joins Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as Agent Ward's brother.
Cool.
Yeah, they're adding more family into the show, so here we go.
Listen, this week's episode was pretty good.
Yeah, it was.
I like this week's episode. You know, did you guys watch it? Other than Roddy, he just answered.
I watched it. I was kind of doing some other stuff at the time, but it was on in the background.
I thought it was pretty good. I enjoyed it.
Batman's become DC's first $4.99 monthly ongoing comic series.
Ooh, and?
Well, at least they're upping the page count.
So right, yeah. 30 pages?
It's 30 pages of story in a 40-page comic.
And that was announced, I guess, actually I saw it yesterday and again this morning, but I guess at some point today, Scott Snyder went on Twitter and was saying that him and himself and Greg Capullo found out just like everyone else, and they've gone back to DC to, I guess, ask for it to be lowered. So we shall see if that actually comes to pass. I doubt it.
Yeah.
So as the comic book store personnel here on the show, Dirt.
The representative of the retail side. Of comics.
As long as the page count goes up, you don't mind. Is that the take?
Personally, I don't mind. I mean, as far as like buying habits of comic book fans, you know, walking through the door, as long as the creative team stays the same, it's not going to have that much impact on it at all. But as soon as one or both of them decide that it's time to move on to something else, then that book's dead in the water.
But then, I mean, I agree with you, but I'm also thinking like, you know, whenever their run ends, and you know both of them will leave at the same time, more than likely. Since it's Batman, they'll try to have, you know, another high-profile team take over.
You hope so.
I can't see it like actually going back down to $3.99. It's like once it's at $4.99.
Yeah, well, and the funny thing is that DC is the company that still has a ton of $2.99 mm-hmm. books on the stand. You know, Marvel's been the one that's been pushing everything up higher and higher and higher, although I did notice somebody came into our store with books that they had bought at Barnes & Noble, and they bought them for like their 8-year-old grandson's birthday, and they bought comics that he already had, so they wanted to know if they could come in and trade them in, you know, to us to pick different comics, whatever. And I noticed that the DC books were actually a dollar higher cover price at Barnes & Noble than they are in the direct market. So, like, Aquaman and the others had a $3.99 cover price from Barnes & Noble, whereas the direct market that we get in the store is $2.99.
I did not know that.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. So, now that I know that, I'm going to kind of go out to Barnes & Noble and just kind of look around and see what other prices they're playing with. Although, I noticed all the Archie books this month have gone up a dollar across the board. And the one thing that they've done is they've added a thicker cardstock cover to try to justify. It's like an extra, you know, 15 cents worth of paper that they've put into the cover, so they can charge you an extra dollar for it now. But I noticed that they snuck that in this month.
The things you learn.
Now you know.
Dum, 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 dum.
Felicity Smoke joins the New 52, and she is the Arrow version.
No, I didn't know she was already a character. I thought they made her up for the show.
I thought they did too.
But apparently she was around in O-52 at some point in Firestorm or something. Yeah. Go figure.
That's who?
Huh?
Who?
Felicity Smoke.
Felicity Smoke.
Yeah, the blonde, the geek, the IT girl. On Arrow?
Well, I mean, I don't watch the TV show, but I'm trying to think of
who she is. Oh, okay.
So, since Green Arrow was a new issue this week, I'm assuming they introduced her there?
Actually, here you go. Felicity Smoke is originally introduced during DC's Earth One era of publication following the events of the 85-86 Crisis on Infinite Earths. Appeared in Firestorm Volume 2.
All right.
So she's a Firestorm character.
Tim, I think it was today's issue.
She married Ronnie Raymond, became Felicity Raymond.
Oh, that actually sounds more familiar than Felicity Smoke. To me.
And it's not smoke like smoke fire.
Right.
S-M-O-K-E.
Right.
Okay, yeah. I was thinking like smoke from Mortal Kombat.
No, this is like Justin Smoke, the first baseman for the Seattle Mariners.
Sports, yeah.
That's funny.
All right. Gotham finds its Two-Face. Some person that I saw that's from Heroes. Let's actually click the link and see his name. I love how everyone's going to be so much older than Bruce Wayne.
That's one of the criticisms I keep reading about this show. And believe it or not, I have yet to watch any of the episodes of Gotham. I plan on catching up at some point. You know, I might do it while I'm prepping for New York Comic Con and like trying to pull comics out of all my old boxes.
That show's acting is kind of nutty. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, I'm not put off by it so far. So
the only thing that kind of put me off is like, okay, yeah, most of the villains, which you would expect would be around, you know, that are showing up are around Bruce's age, you know, that are around because everybody's kind of youngest. But the couple of people like Satoya and her partner, who I thought would have been around the same age, are older going by this. I don't know.
Okay. Brubaker and Phillips, criminal heads to Image in January. How many books do they have going together? Don't they collaborate pretty often?
I think this is their second, I believe. Because they got that deal with Image, so.
Yeah. Oh, did we ever say who the guy playing Two-Face was?
No.
Nicholas de Agosto.
Oh, wait, might be Brubaker's third, because I think he's got Velvet.
Right.
Velvet's on Image, I think.
Okay.
I love the optional story. The first optional story made me laugh today when I watched this video of some dude that created an Iron Man gauntlet that fires actual rockets and missiles. That made me laugh. And if you watch the video all the way through, there's a blooper in it where he was test firing a missile and there was a backfire and he made the mistake of wearing a short sleeve shirt. And there was a bit of a, and the message on the screen, was basically, yeah, that was a mistake. I put a big burn mark on, you know, I received a big burn on my biceps because of this. That was pretty, that was pretty interesting. It's a pretty cool video. You know, this guy's admirable for what he's doing. You know, really putting some engineering and some tech wizardry in there to make that happen. Yeah, kids, don't try this at home.
And Flash Gordon holiday special coming in December, and Funko reveals Pop Marvel X-Men, Deadpool, and Pop Marvel X-Men.
Cool.
Yep, and it's worth noting that it is the 90s version X-Men.
Oh, the Jim Lee X-Men.
Well, no, the animated.
Oh, no. It's funny. I don't think that cartoon has aged very well.
It hasn't.
It's still fun. Well, for me, it's still kind of fun to watch, though.
I haven't seen it in ages, but my memories of it, you know, like I said, it just does not age well. It's not one of those evergreen cartoons, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot of shows I found are like that, though.
Yeah.
All right, so that for this week.
Cool.
And so next week we have Flash and Arrow returning, I believe, on TV. Stay tuned for that.
Indeed.
And The Walking Dead also.
Woo!
Yep.
There you go.
I found a show that Dirt watches.
Hey, I watched Gotham. I just don't think it's that great.
Oh, okay. Which is fine. Let's see. So, who wants, what book should we start with this week? Silence.
Yeah, right. No one wants to volunteer.
Well, here, I'll do the book that Felicity Smoke appeared in. Because she made her appearance.
Oh, you read it.
Green Arrow 35.
Oh, okay.
If I can get this stupid screen share. There we go. All right. So Green Arrow, I didn't know that that's, you know, who that character was or whatever. It's just she appears at the end of the issue and she's just sitting at a bank of computer monitors. But this issue shows Lex Luthor and Bruce Wayne coming to meet Oliver Queen to talk about building some sort of partnership between the businesses. It's a new creative team, you know, that have taken over the book. So the art is different. The writing's a little different. And to me, it did feel a little off, especially considering how it's been for the last, I don't know, year and a half, 2 years, however long those other people have been working on it. I've really enjoyed their run on it, so I was just looking forward to keep going. But, you know, Lex Luthor, I guess, sounded fine because he's just supposed to be this, you know, egotistical villain type guy. But Bruce Wayne just sounded wrong. I don't really know how to describe it. He came across, I don't know. Just wrong. Like, I can't think of any way to put it. Just you're reading it, and I almost expected it to turn out that it wasn't actually Bruce Wayne. I expected it to turn out that Lex Luthor had made an android or hired an actor or, you know, something like that. It wasn't until I read Justice League this week where it shows Bruce Wayne and Lex Luthor, you know, coming together for these business ventures.
Right.
So that's actually where it kicked off.
I guess it's in front of this issue to tell you to read that first?
No, huh?
That sucks. Yeah. Because it's funny. I mean, if you want to roll into, do you have something to say about Green Arrow?
Well, no. I was just gonna say. I wonder if the way that the character sounds, specifically Bruce Wayne, has something to do with the fact that these are the writers from the show, or these are the ones writing this are from the show Arrow.
Maybe, but the one thing I understand that the timing is off. Justice League has been delayed.
Right.
So it's actually on issue 34, I think, and this is right. Green Arrow 35. So technically, this issue of Justice League should have been out last month. So there's your lead-in, you know, for this issue is the Justice League should have already been out. So that's the problem as far as that goes. But the whole issue itself, the last run of Green Arrow was all about the Outsiders and his father and learning the secrets of his origin and the island and how all the different people that are part of the Outsiders that his father was a part of, that he was supposed to be brought into as a part of, how they're all more than just people with you know, random abilities, how it's preordained and there's a mystical aspect to it and you know, all of this other stuff. And then you start this issue and it's really, it feels like what I imagine the TV show was like, where it's just he and Diggle are kind of arguing about a bunch of stuff, having these little quips, and his secretary girl is trying to be his girlfriend, but he's trying to keep her somewhat distanced, and she doesn't understand him anyway, and you know, this random villain appears, and so he's going to go check it out. And it didn't feel like there was any sort of grand scheme other than they just wanted him to interact with some characters and then end up doing a face-off with a villain at the end. So it just didn't have that same kind of plotting and in-depth thinking and all the advanced groundwork that you've seen in the last run of Green Arrow. So, I mean, I was a little disappointed, but it's one of those things that maybe if the whole arc pans out, then, you know, maybe they can redeem it later on. But it just felt off. It doesn't feel like a continuation of the same series. It almost feels like, you know, they almost should have ended it, and this is, you know, Green Lantern New 52 Volume 2 Number 1. You know, it just feels so different from what it's been doing.
Yeah. I could see that happening. All right. Let's see. Let me find one to throw out there. Let's get to Bucky Barnes, the Winter Soldier.
Awesome.
Yes, let's.
Awesome.
First, let me say.
That was my exact same impression.
Well, see, here's the thing. I know Tim's taste in art. This is not Tim's taste in art.
It's not, and Alice Cott's not my taste in writer either. It's like just both of them together made for an interesting read.
Listen, this was very, very inspired by Steranko. You know, if you've ever read some of Steranko's, Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., or and the few but seminal issues of Captain America that he did, there's definitely a strong, strong influence from Steranko on this book, on the layouts, on the artwork itself. It's just very, very stylized. It's somewhat hard to decipher. You know, I'm looking forward to getting this in print this week and seeing what it looks like in my hands as opposed to it, you know, being on a screen. And I wonder if that changes the experience somewhat. But I liked the groundwork that Cott is laying out for, you know, Bucky's new role in the Marvel Universe. And I like the fact that it's not just him that he threw in, spoiler alert, a character from Secret Warriors and Secret Wars, to kind of help ground the story and give the Winter Soldier not a sidekick but a partner in crime. Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
It kind of made sense. The character was there, but it was like, wait, wasn't he supposed to be doing this by himself?
Yeah, I like that they made sure to throw in there how it was someone that Fury trusted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And let's see. There's the reveal at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just say, I don't even understand who the person was supposed to have been just because I don't understand the art. I have no idea who that was supposed to have been.
I think it's intentionally vague.
Okay.
I think it's intentionally vague. They want you to turn to to go to the next issue and see, you know, what's going on. And it's kind of interesting that the teaser for the next issue is next, Asgard. I'm like, what does that mean? How does that play into this?
Well, no, because that guy brought up.
No, I know, but in terms of the way it ended.
Mm.
You know, like that last page. I was like, wait a second, what do you mean next is Asgard? What happened with this guy? You know what I mean?
Right.
Dorgeekus tweeted that he thought the art was too trippy and put the book back down. Listen, I thought, like I said, I like it because it's very reminiscent of the Steranko style, at least the layout. I'm willing to give this a shot. And listen, I collected the Winter Soldier limited series that Brubaker started. I like the character. I want to see where it goes. And this, you know, wasn't, you know, a terrible first start. So I'm willing to see, you know, I'm willing to let this play out for a little bit. And I like the back and forth between this character from, spoiler alert, from Secret War and Secret Warriors. I like the back and forth that they had. Yeah. You know, yeah, that she had with Bucky, so.
Yeah, and speaking of interactions, I kind of like the one between Bucky and Namor.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Actually with Bucky and Cap, you know, in All New Invaders, and then read him in Secret Avengers. New Avengers.
Right.
And be like, oh, okay, you know. Like, talk about having a couple of different voices, different aspects to his personality.
Yeah.
You know, they're all on display in Marvel Comics right now.
Apparently, Namor was a player. Who knew?
Ah!
Sue Storm.
No.
Not the same way.
Yeah. He's talking about Imperius. I thought that was a good line.
Yeah.
That was a good line.
And that's also learned. Anybody that's really in love with you, they never just slowly, passionately make love to you. It's hardcore, sweaty love. And that's the bad advice I want to give to people this week. If you really love somebody, you got to do some really, really hardcore fornicating with each other.
I'm actually agree with you on this bad advice. I think you, your love should be expressed in filth.
Hey everybody, this is Gordon Baker Bone of the Baker Bone and Rome Bad Advice Show. Listening to a Cold Slither podcast. Definitely listen, definitely download, and definitely listen to our bad advice, because you'll need it one day.
Keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit coldslitherpodcast.com. Then click on the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the right of the page. Scroll down and you'll be able to shop at Amazon through us. There you can buy books, games, movies, music, and much more at Amazon, while at the same time helping us manage the cost of our network and keep our podcast free for you.
Did anyone read the new Thor?
Yes.
Yeah.
You can find a review on dclicknation.com and popculturenetwork.com.
Woo-hoo. Ha-ha! So, you know, I'm probably amongst the four of us the biggest Thor fan on the panel. And I like this issue. I like the fact that, you know, we delve right into where we left off. I don't know if this should have been Thor 26 and then start fresh with, you know, the new Thor in a new number one. It felt like we were dealing a lot with the aftermath of Thor God of Thunder in this. And I thought maybe, you know, the new Thor was getting a little bit of short shrift, and it was a lot of setup that could have been accomplished in the final issue of Thor God of Thunder. But I like that Aaron is sort of teasing who it might be, and we still don't know who it is. I thought that's an effective way to get people to come back for a second issue. The art by Russell Dauterman was pretty good. It's definitely a change of pace from Esad Ribic. The Ribic art is going to go down as some of the best Thor work that's been done ever. And, you know, I want to see where Dauterman goes with this. But, you know, it wasn't a bad start for a first issue. I like this. Whether or not, you know, listen, it's comics. None of this stuff is ever permanent. Change is an illusion. I'm still kind of torn I'm torn over what to think about this particular direction for the character. So
the one rumor that I've heard is that you will not find out who the new Thor is until 2015.
Wow. That is a long time.
Only like 3 or 4 months, though, so I can... But
I'm guessing that's going to be the final... You know, you have 6 issues in the trade,
mm-hmm.
so that's going to be mm-hmm. the final chapter of the trade is the great reveal of who it is.
So let's see. October,
November. It seemed, well, okay.
So in spring. Yeah, I can see mm-hmm. that.
And one account, it seems kind of obvious to who the person is.
Or who they want you to think it is.
Right. Exactly.
But, yeah, I guess there could have been a swerve or something. Did anybody think that, maybe this is a nitpick, did anybody think that the conversations between Odin and Freya was a little aggressive?
I found it funny.
No, that too, but...
I like how he's turned... Well... I guess he's probably always been grouchy sitcom dad. He turned into like Al Bundy and Peg. It turned into like an Al Bundy Peg.
Peg Bundy. That's a good reference.
Showing my age.
That is a good reference. That's funny.
Yeah, he's brought up. I guess we still don't know what was whispered either. So.
Yeah, we'll find out later.
Yeah.
What else did Dirt Geeker say? He said it may be something huge. Oh, that's what Agent Smith said.
Oh, yeah. I replied to, Dirk Geeka says the Thor art was great, you know, referring to Russell Dauterman. He just wishes that the Odin son did something a little bigger to be unworthy. I replied, it may be something huge, but it was whispered. Dorky, because I don't want to step all over his joke, says George Michael's Careless Whisper defeated. Good one.
So, yeah. But I enjoyed it. I gave it a 4 out of 5, and I just... I'm trying to remember what I took a point away for. I guess because we didn't actually get to see much of the new Thor until the very end of the book. But, I mean, we have plenty more to go. And yes, Russell Dauterman's art is awesome. I like his rise to about to be superstardom, because when I, you know, I've been reading comic books for a long time, and I took a break, and I just recently got back to reading a couple of years ago, and one of the first books I ended up trying to get back into, I saw this series called Superbia from Boom Studios. It was like a new number one, and supposedly the series had been out in different volumes before. I was like, you know, people with superpowers living in, like, in the suburbs and trying to go about their lives. Sounded kind of interesting to me. Picked it up. Russell Dauterman was the artist on it. I loved his art, but I just didn't keep up with the book or the story, so I let it go. And then later on, he did a couple issue stints on Nightwing, and then when that ended, he jumped over to Marvel and launched Cyclops. So I've been enjoying his stuff. I could see him being like one of the Young Guns, all new Young Guns for 2015 if they decide to do it year after year.
I can see it. I can see it.
Yes.
All right. Let's see. What else did you guys read?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and throw one out.
Go ahead.
Moon Knight, number 8, I guess. I'll go there first.
Moon Knight. This was a pretty good issue. This is one of my contenders for Click of the Week.
I mean, they're definitely still doing the one-off story deals that Ella started, which I think they said there was rumored to be doing for a minute. This one was a pretty solid and different, because, you know, all the, I guess that's the good thing about the series, has been that all the ones have been kind of dealt with, or not dealt with, but shown in different ways. This was no different. So we have Moon Knight dealing with a hostage situation in a high-rise building, which immediately almost went hard, but, you know, not
it was
so,
very die
not
hard
to be.
Then, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, a little bit. They just didn't really go, like, he wasn't already inside and, you know, all that kind of goodness. It was kind of him on the outside.
It just made me, you know, all I needed was Reginald Vell Johnson in the position of the cop.
Well, actually, yeah, I guess that's kind of what he was at this case, because even though he was kind of like, hang on, again, I can't, you know, let me talk to you a minute. So. But I was about, like you said, it was a good read, and the way they presented it was different.
Absolutely, and I think that's right. That's what really caught my attention. That's what absorbed me into the story, was the presentation and the layout, mm-hmm. and how, you know, the story was told. And I really give, you know, just checking now, I forget the artist on this right now, Greg Smallwood. I give mm-hmm. him a lot of credit. For this issue, in terms of the way it was laid out, in terms of the little touches that he put in to really make it seem like you were watching, you know, it very much felt like a storyboard of a short film. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, it did feel, you know, you could definitely see maybe it was an homage to Die Hard, you know, to a certain extent, but you know, I definitely enjoyed this. I liked that it was so different, that it was well done. It was the layout was different, artistic, and yet still very easy to follow, you know, unlike what was going on in Bucky the Winter Soldier. I'm still not sure how to, you know, there's still an overarching arc to this story where Moon Knight's psychiatrist has some role to play as a possible big bad. So, you know, the stories are still connected to a certain extent. I don't know if I'm a fan of how they're trying to keep, you know, like that subplot running while all these other things are going on. But, you know, we'll see. I like this issue. Like I said, it's definitely a contender for Click of the Week for me. right.
Guardians 3000, number one.
This was fun, too. This was a fun, fun read.
I enjoyed it as well.
Yep.
Another contender for Click of the Week for me.
That is the same here, actually.
So, this is the original Guardians that
yep.
the Guardians of the Galaxy are based off of. So, this starts in the year 3000 and something. They are a band of freedom fighters battling the Badoon, and they seem to be caught in some type of time.
Groundhog Day.
Yeah, Groundhog Day. What was that? I'm thinking of Star Trek The Next Generation. It was like the last episode. Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Paradox. It's a paradox.
Yeah. All good things, yeah.
Yeah, just a fun comic. I'm not sure Geraldo Sandoval's arts for everyone, but I enjoy it. I like how it's sort of very animated.
Yeah, I was thinking, it was like, okay, because, okay, so from the backup story in Guardians 14, I think they took some, I don't know if it was the same artist on that one, but they kind of lightened up on it because it was looking very anime in that, in that one. And they've kind of lightened up on that a little bit.
It's the same artist.
Okay, so yeah, so he's kind of restrained himself then.
Yeah, what I was going to say is it's anime, but it's definitely Joe Madd.
Yeah.
There's a strong, strong Joe Madureira influence here, you know, in terms of the physiques and the general build of the characters and the facial structure. You can, you know, that's definitely an influence on this guy's art. And, you know, obviously anime as well.
And they're clearly going away from the let's say, quirkiness of the anime, of the 90s series that they had.
Okay.
But it was definitely a good read, and I'm kind of curious about a couple of things that may or may not show up, because if anybody knows the original crew, Nikki's not there, even though they do have a redhead in a crew right now. Mm-hmm. Alita, which, if I remember correctly, was... put back into Starhawk, but then none of that's kind of shown up yet, so I don't know. I wonder if they're kind of going away from all that, even though you still see things like, hey, Van Sorcerer's got the shield, and you know, and they still have the Captain America.
What I was going to say is maybe what they're going to try to maintain is a small core team. You know, they've got basically five characters plus this this kid, the redhead, so you know, maybe they'll try to keep it to six and make it easier to follow.
We do see a current Guardian show up in the book. So there's that.
Yeah, I like the future versions of...
Yeah, they do to keep that little aspect, which is kind of cool. So,
What's that group called in the current, in the present, when all the people of the different races get together?
Oh, the little forum or whatever it is. I can't remember what it is, what it's called.
It's like a Congress of Worlds or something?
Yeah, something like that. I don't remember.
So that's the Guardians 3000. I give it a thumbs up. I will continue to read. What else we got? Uncanny Avengers 25 is the lead-in to Axis, which starts... Oh, I'm sorry. Avengers and X-Men Axis, which starts next week, unless they delay it. I'm assuming it's already done. Basically, it's Havoc, Rogue, Scarlet Witch, and Magneto versus Red Skull and his X-Men.
Oh, yeah, I did read this. I didn't put it on my list. And now I remember why I wasn't happy with this. Go on, Tim. You wanted to...
I did learn that the Red Skull's head isn't actually red like that.
It depends on who's writing.
Yeah, so there's that, and I guess kind of a surprise ending to lean to another surprise.
I don't think it was a surprise ending because we've seen the previews for Axis. So we knew this was going to happen eventually. I just wasn't, you know, it brings back a lot of bad memories of the late 90s, you know, with the reintroduction of this character. You know, spoiler alert. We have seen him in the preview, so it's not that much of a spoiler, but Onslaught is back, or at least a version of Onslaught. And, you know, it was just a weird, you know, it was just a weird way for Onslaught to emerge. It's like, really? He just got his, spoiler alert, head literally knocked in, and all of a sudden this is
really hard to lose,
you know? And this is how Onslaught, you know, emerges. I thought that was kind of weird, but, you know. Maybe they're running out of pages. Who knew?
It was a natural progression to the next stage.
And I see.
We should remind everyone that it appears Remender loves doing this to people.
What's
you're
that?
Dead. Oh, oh you're, yeah. No, you're not. But hey.
So. Well, did you enjoy the issue?
I mean, it wasn't, I guess as the lead into the next thing, it didn't really do much for me.
Mm-hmm.
I liked seeing Red Skull get beat up.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like seeing Magneto, you know, kind of get in some hand to hand, right?
Yeah. And like you said, get his head actually bashed in.
Right. So,
I'm kind of excited for Axis. I think I'll enjoy it more than Original Sin. I guess it might not be saying much.
Yeah, it doesn't say much. I don't even know what really happened in Original Sin. That, you know what I mean? That caused any sort of, you know, that was worth the whole, the, you know, the lead in and the hype. So,
you know, hey, a lot of new books, some new threads to kind of go off of to make new stories, that kind of stuff. But outside of the actual event stories, not so much.
Yeah. All right.
Anyone got any to bring up?
Did anyone read Gotham Academy number 1?
Yep.
Yes. I guess we've been holding off on that one.
Oh, what were we?
No, not on purpose.
Oh. Well, Dirt, what do you think?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I even vined about it.
No kidding.
What's the hashtag to use?
Vine comic reviews. It's really hard to do a comic review in 6 seconds, but I'm trying.
I can imagine.
I'm working on it. I'm keeping the system down.
I really liked it. It's good.
Thumbs down. Trash it.
But, you know, really, this book, to me, this is more of what I wanted out of Ms. Marvel. Whoop, what happened? Lost the book. There we go. What I wanted out of Ms. Marvel that I felt like I didn't get is what's happening in this one, where it's more, it's got a level of whimsy to it. It doesn't take itself too seriously. It's set in, obviously, the, you know, Batman universe. I mean, it's Gotham. But really, the only real character that crosses over is an appearance by Bruce Wayne, and he's more of just a comic foil for a particular scene, and then he's gone. Like, that's all his interaction really is. So it's more about this fun, you know, school that this prep school that these people are at, and the interaction between the characters. This particular issue is following a character who is getting a tour of the campus, and she happens to be the younger sister of the older girl's ex-boyfriend. So you've got, there's no like love triangle stuff going on in here or anything like that. They just have history behind the characters, so you have a little bit of tension while you're going through stuff, but only to just make things awkward and uncomfortable between the characters, not because there's any sort of like romance story going on or anything like that. It's just there to, you know, to make things more difficult. But I, you know, I really enjoyed it. The artwork is beautiful. I mean, it looks like freeze frames of
an animated
series. Yeah,
yes.
It looks tight and clean and crisp. colorful. Everything has a nice pop to it. So I just felt like this, you know, just it hit all the right marks going through it. I really enjoyed it.
I enjoyed the art. The story, but I really did like the art. The art definitely stuck out for me.
The story, you could tell, was structured in such a way that it gets you familiar with what this academy is like, right. You know, what the role of everybody is in the book, where they kind of fall into that kind of social structure and the daily routine of what life is like there. But then there's also just a couple small threads of a greater mystery that's yet to unfold. Right. And to me, that's enough that you... By the time I got done with this issue, I was familiar with the characters, I liked the characters, and I knew that something is going to happen down the road because they're hinting at something. They're giving you these little threads of something that's building, that's mm-hmm. going to be happening. So I thought it was, you know, the perfect type of introduction for one of these types of books to... to explain everything, to get you comfortable with everything, and then kind of give you this sense that something is building to come back for.
Do you think it's going to gain traction, the book, amongst fandom and purchasers?
I think there is a place for it, especially in the Batman universe. I think Batman is one of those characters that does tend to kind of break through those barriers of male, female, different age groups, younger, older. So I think that this will definitely attract a certain section of, although the changes that they're making to Batgirl look a lot like what this book is also doing. So I don't know if there's going to be room for both or if the two of them are going to be fighting with each other. But I mean, we'll just have to kind of wait and see, but I can see there being as big of a slice of the pie that would be interested in this as there would be with something like, Gotham Central, or one of those type, offshoot books.
Mm-hmm. So is this DC's Runaways?
I didn't read Runaways, but sure.
I don't know. That's a good. I got to think about that one. I read Runaways. I read all the early stuff, and I don't know about that. I don't know if that's an accurate comparison, but I'll have to get back to you on that.
This is a series to me where, like, all three people need to stay on the book. Once one leaves, especially the art to me. Like, if Carl Kreshel ever has to step away from it, unless they find someone just as good.
Yeah, they have to find someone with that same type of distinctive style where it has that animated feel to it. So it's pretty, but having that particular style of look to it gives it a certain feel. Like, you pick it up, you open it up, and that kind of helps you to understand how it's not so serious.
Right.
And I think if you just had a regular, if you have David Finch come in and draw an issue.
Oh, Lord. No, Finch would tear this apart. This would be awful.
Yeah, exactly. This would just be awful.
They'll all be, people just, gritting their teeth. You got to give props to the colorist also. Colors by Geyser with Dave McKay. That, the colors on this are solid and really complement, the finished look of the art. And also really lend that animated, the cell animated look to, to the book.
This might be the prettiest looking book I've seen this year.
I also, one thing that, when I mentioned Bruce Wayne earlier, like, he appears just in that one small segment,
mm-hmm.
Just as a punchline, really.
You've got to tie this to...
But to me, the way that they put him in there is... the way I think Gotham, the series, should have unfolded, whereas the first pilot episode of Gotham had every single character that has anything to do with Batman and any interaction with Bruce Wayne over the next 20 years, they threw in there, they gave him a name, they gave him a spotlight so that you knew exactly who they were and who they're going to be and how they're going to react. And, Ivy is a little girl, but she's playing with plants, and Selina's a little girl, but she's crawling up and down fire escapes and across roofs, so you know exactly who everybody is. Whereas in this one, it's like, okay, it's in Gotham. Here's Bruce Wayne, and now he's gone. So you know it's connected, and they can bring him back any time to have him interact, but it's not taking away from these other characters and these other situations.
Yeah, there's a lot of... What's good about the series is there's so many different ways they can take it. So options are good in storytelling. So yeah, we all enjoyed Gotham Academy. And cool. I actually like the art on this more than... Like, I saw the preview pages with Batgirl. I was like, eh. I mean, I'm still going to read it next week, but unless like the story, unless the story is real good, I'm not sure how how much I'll be keeping up with Batgirl.
It depends on how much the 13-year-old girl within you is screaming for something to read.
Ah!
That's what Gotham Academy is for.
Well, that's what the 13-year-old girl inside of me wants to read. Put on some Taylor Swift and start reading Gotham.
Oh, no. Oh, God.
All right, let's move on.
Roddy Cat.
Yes?
Tell us about Fiction Squad number one.
No.
Oh, oh no.
No, I'm just kidding.
Actually, I don't know how I saw a cover for it or something earlier this week, and I was like, ooh, that looks kind of interesting.
Yeah, so, little backstory. This was a Kickstarter that was successfully funded back in June at some point, June, July. The writer, Paul Jenkins, was at Dragon Con, and I happened to hear, like, I remember seeing it before, but I happened to hear the pitch from him, well, when he was on a panel that I went to on there, and it was, and just like you, it was like, hey, this seems kind of interesting. So basically what the premise is that we have this detective. So this whole world is based in another book that he did, apparently, called Fablewood, or another world called Fablewood, because he did another story called Fable Quest, I believe it's called. But it's all set in that world.
Yeah,
and this,
yeah, that's another Boom series.
Right. So this is kind of a of-the-world type of deal where we have this... detective named Frankie Mack, who comes from, so each country, you might as well say, is a different genre of the world. So you got your crime novels here, you got your children's books here, you have romance novels here. They all have their own little countries. Frankie Mack is a PI that came from the crime novel. He's kind of like a old style Mickey Spillane type of, you know, down on his luck type of detective who ends up going to the children's story country because his book didn't get finished or whatever it be, and started working for the police there. His partner in crime is Simple Simon. His police captain is Tom Thumb, and he is that stereotypical, don't screw up, and, you know, you're making us look bad. I'm getting chewed out type of boss. Pinocchio's his snitch.
That's funny.
Yeah, we have two rival mobs. You have the queens and the witches, you know, and everything else is of the world. Like old McDonald shows up at the police station, and they ask him, well, what do you have on your farm? And then he goes, so the humor kind of goes into kind of stuff. Very directly, but they're playing it rather serious. That said,
he's not at a spelling bee.
Oh, but that kind of stuff could potentially happen. Oh yeah, okay, that kind of stuff probably could happen. Like, speaking of that, Bingo, the dog shows up, and that does happen.
No.
They ask him how to spell his name.
Oh no.
So you get a lot of.
I might just read this just to laugh, if I need a laugh this weekend, that'll be.
It was a very cool read, and the art was very nice as well. But the story is pretty much Frankie's investigating, you know, things going on there, and he kind of gets in his nose in the middle of the turf war that is potentially brewing between the queens and the witches, you know. And it was a rather enjoyable. I think it's only a 6-issue book, But I am going to continue reading this because it seems like it's kind of fun, and at the same time, it's just kind of got those little nods to say, you know, that I kind of enjoy in books like that. So you get
and the art is roughed good, up, right?
Yeah, and the art is pretty good. Like pretty much what you see on the cover is how the inside of the book is. I think there's a cover by what's the name? Humberto. Ramos.
Humberto Ramos? Whatever.
Yeah. I think he does one of the covers. And nice. The guy, Raymond Box, I think, is like doing the art. And he's kind of in that same style from what I'm being led to believe. So it is cool. You should check this out if you like anything that I've mentioned.
Okay.
That
any
works.
Did anybody read Grayson?
Who?
I have not had a chance Grayson. Yet.
Oh, Grayson, yeah, I did.
I cracked open the first page, and then I was told to read something else by one of our co-hosts on here.
Gee, I wonder who could have that have been.
So, did you read Grayson?
I did not. That's what I was just asking. I was about to, but I didn't get a chance to.
I read it. It was an interesting read. I wasn't a fan of Dick Grayson sort of breaking cover. I mean, he's supposed to be, you know, they all know who he is, so they know that he's a former, like, superhero type. But I guess this is, you know, his method versus Spiral's method. If you read the first, what is it, 1, 2, 3, 4 pages in, there is a kind of off-color adult joke/reference, and that sort of sets the stage for, you know, how I sort of read the book from then on in. Ultimately, like I said,
is it good or bad?
I can't
tell if you enjoyed that part of it or if it distracted.
Oh, it was definitely distracting because my mind was like, you know, 50 million miles away from what was going on in the comic, right?
Ooh, okay.
Did you read it?
No, I haven't had a chance yet.
Oh, okay, you'll see what I mean when you get there. The story was okay. There's some twists at the end that were interesting, and the story does take a turn in terms of his status as an agent of Spiral and, you know, what they may or may not think are his ulterior motives, in becoming a part of their organization. So whether or not I keep up with this, listen, we're getting up to the fourth issue. It's okay. Not great. I think the hiatus for, the Futures End stuff kind of helped. It made you kind of miss it a little bit and made you want to catch up, so it kind of forced you to read this issue.
So I need to read the Futures End issue before reading this?
No.
Okay.
I was going to ask that. The first couple of ones, I kind of got interested in reading this. Now you kind of...
Listen, if you're a fan of the direction that they're going in, this is probably essential reading because you do want to see what happens next. I was just, you know, I'm not so keen on, you know, the hunting down superhero type thing that I guess is the ulterior motive of this agency, so. Or creating, you know, countermeasures for superheroes, you know what I mean?
Yeah. What are you going to say, Dirk?
I was just going to say that you should go ahead, though, and read the Futures End version because it was a really well-done story.
Yeah, I remember you saying you liked it. I've had it saved. I just haven't gotten to it yet. Oh, and this tweet here that I just tweeted out with the Comic Book Chronicles hashtag is what someone sent me to sum up this issue.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly what I was talking about. That's page 4.
Yeah.
That's page 4, like I said.
Oh, hubba hubba.
Oh, yeah.
That was like the perfect... Isaac Hayes.
That's funny.
So we have a request to hear what Lobo number 1 was like.
fine.
Who all? Did anybody else read it?
No.
Mm, wow. A lot of haters.
No, just
too much DC avoiding. Stuff.
People avoiding.
Like I looked at the list.
Lobo.
Honestly, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't, you know, anywhere close to the best thing I read this week. You've been following this character at all. The premise is that a big biker guy that you think of as Lobo is not really Lobo. He's just some dirtbag that stole the name in order to take the reputation and then started gallivanting across the galaxy. So this is the actual Lobo, who is the former king's bodyguard of the Caesarian people.
The original dirtbag.
And he is the because he was supposed to be the bodyguard for the king, so I'm guessing he was also his slash assassin, hitman, you know, whoever. And so the basic story is he's been tracking down that other Lobo for a long time. That concludes at the beginning of this issue and then sets up for the next chapter of his life because, you know, so far we only know him as this guy who's been tracking down the other Lobo. It goes into his backstory a little bit, tells you a little bit about him, and then sets up the next thing, which is he's being hired to track down a group of assassins who are planning some sort of attack on Earth. He doesn't really know why. He doesn't really know who's behind it. He just knows he's been hired. So he's going into that whole kind of hitman, you know, moral gray ground. He's going in to attack these guys, but at the same time, he kind of wants to know who's in charge and why they're doing it. So they're trying to give this extra layer of mystery to the story that he's going to track down. So, it wasn't terrible, you know. I mean, it wasn't bad, but there was nothing about it that really just like, oh man, I can't wait for the next issue. You know what I mean? I'm fine with the character. I'm fine with the idea that he, you know, was tracking down the other guy. I really have no problem with them doing that type of story with the character because, let's face it, the original Lobo character was supposed to be a parody of the 90s dark and gritty characters, and they, for whatever reason, kept him. So the fact that they finish him off and replace him with this guy instead, I'm okay with that. That doesn't bother me. But, you know, I mean, the book was fine. It just didn't blow me away.
I probably will be of the same mind when I read it. I'm sure I'm going to like the art, Riley Brown, and I'm a Cullen Bunn fan, but the character himself, eh.
Mm. I think one of the problems the book has is because it's galactic-based, it does that thing where you just have random alien beings kind of thrown in all over the place. So you've got a green squid guy who appears out of nowhere, and then you've got this kind of fat, bald, blue guy with orange stripes who comes in, and you know, it's kind of hard to care about any of these people because they're people you've never seen before. They're random, cartoony looking, you know, outer space characters. They just look like rejects from the Animaniacs. So you don't really care one way or another. You know, that's just, I think, the problem that a book like this has.
Okay.
So, I mean, it was all right, but whatever.
Gotcha.
All righty, then.
Hey.
Rapid review time?
Actually, I wanted to talk about Detective Comics.
Yeah, what happened?
What do you mean, what happened?
So where's my creative team?
Well, they changed the creative team.
Are they done?
I don't know.
I want answers.
Well, all I know is I picked up this one, and I looked at the cover, and I said, hey, that looks like John Paul Leon. And I looked, and it said Leon in the credits. And I was like, what? And I opened it up, and the artwork is John Paul Leon. And, yeah, but John Paul Leon is a fantastic artist. Like, I love his artwork. He is one of those guys. He was doing books under the, I think it was the Helix imprint for DC back in the mid-90s, and I loved his artwork. And so once I saw that he was on this, I didn't care about what happened to the other guys or what the other storyline was or whatever. It's like, John Paul Leon's doing this book. I'm in. And I thought it was a really fun story. And it kind of – it pokes fun at The Strain a little bit. I don't know if you've seen that show or read that comic, but it's all about this virus on this airplane, and the airplane lands, and you have no idea what happened to these people and, you know, whatever, so forth. This is kind of doing a similar thing, although it goes in a completely different direction after the initial setup. But he's fighting an eco-terrorist who thinks that humankind is the, you know, worst thing to ever happen to planet Earth. So he wants to destroy all the human life by putting this virus out there. And I just found it was interesting. You don't see villains like that a lot of times in comics. You know, you usually have these much they're either cartoony, you know, Joker, Two-Face, Penguin, or they're just random guy with a nuke who's going to destroy, you know, Times Square. So I thought it was interesting the way that they, you know, mixed in a different type of villain you don't always see. And it had artwork from John Paul Leon, so I was sold. So I really enjoyed it. It's one of those things that I also found myself a lot of times while I was reading it. I was reading the words, and then I was just stopping and staring at the page for a while and just looking at the artwork. And some of the scenes he did of the Gotham City airport and the rain slick streets and the way he draws the reflections and everything, just it always boggles my mind when I look at his artwork. It's just so incredibly awesome. I found myself just staring at panels sometimes. So definitely a thumbs up for that one.
All right.
I just sent Batman Group editor Mark Doyle a tweet asking, did the creative team change? Need answers. Rapid review time?
All right.
Sure.
I'll throw out Death of Wolverine number 3 and the never-ending march to Wolverine's death just keeps on going.
He's not dead yet?
No, not yet. Not yet, not yet, not yet. I'm still struggling with reading this. You know, they've done, you know, they've done a lot to bring back a lot of, you know, they've intertwined so many parts of Wolverine's history. A lot of it in history, you kind of have to go back a little bit to really understand where these characters come in. Characters like Ogun and Cyber and, you know, and what's going on with who may be the big bad in this, because apparently we're only one issue left before Logan bites the big one. Like I said, I'm still kind of struggling with how this is all playing out over the course of 4 issues. Maybe it's just the way that the story's been laid out. It just doesn't feel like, you know, it just doesn't, I haven't enjoyed reading it, and it's kind of a, you know, it's been kind of a struggle more so than, you know, reading a good story. That's just my personal take on it.
Trying to put it all into just 4 issues. It would have been different if, like, the Wolverine series had been, like, planting seeds for whatever this is about to come now. But for some reason, unless issue 4 is totally different, it seems like this is telling its own separate thing from what the Wolverine ongoing series was doing.
Oh, definitely. Definitely, definitely, definitely.
It's like we need him dead so we can get to the. Yeah, I read it.
The aftermath.
It just seems like
they need
to get.
Yeah.
What aftermath?
The aftermath. That's what you want to get to. The aftermath of his death. They have all those other comics that are coming out dealing with the aftermath of his death.
That's what I'm saying.
There's one that touches on it that I read, but
that seems like the interesting stuff.
Oh, okay.
It's like after he's dead.
To me, it just doesn't feel like it's building up to his death. I mean, it doesn't feel like I'm on the road that's leading to him eventually dying.
Right. It definitely reads like he's on the road to a confrontation, but not dying.
Right. I mean, it doesn't feel any more different or special than anything else that I've read with Wolverine over the years.
Maybe that's what I'm struggling with. You know, that's why I wanted to hear what else, you know, what you guys had to say about it. Like, I know Tim read it. I wanted to hear if you guys had, you know, like a different perspective as like non-X-Men people.
Yeah, so. I mean, I think for me, the Wolverine stuff I've read over the years, Old Man Logan felt more like a story leading up to Wolverine.
Up to his death.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Whereas this just kind of feels like these could be four issues of part of the regular Wolverine series and it wouldn't matter.
That's probably the best way to put it. Maybe that's putting a better take on how I'm just sort of feeling. You know, I'm not feeling the flow of the story.
There is no flow.
Yeah, that's probably that's the hardest thing to grasp. You know, it's a story, but there's no flow to it.
There's no crescendo. Like the crescendo isn't going to be big enough the way they've built it up to be so far.
Agreed.
So, that's Death the Wolverine. Oh, and,
Hey everyone, it's your old friend Classic here, inviting you to check out my show, Classic Team Up, available right here on the Cold Slither Podcast Network. Of course, Classic Team Up is a show where I interview a guest of my choosing each week, and this week is a special two-guest episode where I've got William Bruce West as one guest, the first ever three-time guest of our show, and the other guest is Mike, who's a first-time guest on the Classic Team Up. Together, the three of us talk about RetroCon 2014, which we all attended this past week. We talk about who we saw, what we saw, and what awesome things were taking place there. Just as well, we also give a review and a recap of Angry Video Game Nerd the Movie, so you won't want to miss that. We have a lot of good times, and we hope that you can join us and enjoy. Once again, right here on the Cold Slither Podcast Network. Keep it locked here, and then just scroll up and listen to Classic Team Up. See you there.
Green Lantern, New Gods, Godhead.
Oh, yes. We were talking about this off the air just prior to coming on, and you know, I read this very, very quickly on my way home today. I like this. This is the reintroduction of the New Gods, New Genesis to the DC universe, the New 52 universe proper. I like the fact that they're intertwining what's been happening in the Green Lantern books into New God stuff and connecting the two aspects of the cosmic part of the DC universe.
Yeah, it definitely makes a lot of that Green Lantern stuff feel like, you know, the Green Lantern stories have always been like these wide galactic.
Right.
You know, this is supposed to be something big and epic, but then where do you see the ripples? Well, you see the ripples in the Green Lantern books.
Mm-hmm.
So now it finally kind of feels like all of these big, epic, massive space things are starting to ripple on a big, massive galactic level, and it's grabbing the attention of other big galactic epic characters. And when you get the New Gods suddenly going, okay, what's going on over here? Let's get involved in this because I can see a lot of big stuff happening. Then it makes it feel like it's got a lot more weight to it.
Well, I think it was an effective way to tie in, you know, the New Gods. I think this was a great way to introduce them. You know, like you said, there's been so much, you know, we've talked about it before. The New 52 didn't really alter what was happening in Green Lantern because it was so, you know, they had done so, you know, Geoff Johns had done so much with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they left a lot of that alone. And I think, you know, they really piggybacked on, you know, this and Batman, you know, are the two, you know, steady storylines that stayed on through the New 52. I think it was wise of DC to on the Green Lantern stories and use that as a means to reintroduce the New Gods to DC. So, you know, I like that. I thought it was a pretty, you know, creative and almost not common sense, but it made a lot of sense the way it was written.
So since I'm a Marvel person and I know absolutely nothing about New Gods, as I was reading this, I started making the, you know, comparisons to characters over in Marvel, I know.
Mm-hmm.
So, or like the New Genesis, is that like Asgard and Highfather is Odin and Orion is Thor? Is that a good comparison?
Kinda.
Mm-hmm. That just like dawned on me as I was reading this.
Kinda. I mean, yeah. Listen, that's.
That's Jack Kirby's original idea going into it was, I mean, by calling it The New Gods, the idea of taking a lot of those
archetypes,
mythological characters, and a lot of those ideals, and then making it more sci-fi. So taking those fantasy characters and taking, aspects from Thor and Asgard, but also stuff from, Greek and Roman gods. And a lot of those types of things, and folding them as well, but then making it outer space and zap guns and, that type of stuff.
Boxes. Okay. I haven't finished. I got maybe like 5 more pages to finish this issue, but it seems all right. I don't know what it is about the Green Lantern books now. They're not grasping me.
I stopped reading them a while back.
Like how easily they were able to get the rings they needed, the new guys. I mean, getting the rings and.
Well, it's meant to it's meant to show the power levels of the new gods. I think.
Right. So, I mean, because if you think back to other times in Green Lantern history, Batman just walked up to Guy Gardner, and whiffed right through his Green Lantern abilities and just. Made ring fall off of Guy Gardner's hand and appear on his hand, because it's all about willpower. So once you kind of leave the mortal plane that kind of exists outside of our realm, then they're going to have no problem, overpowering the will and the fear and the love and the power of these other characters. The one thing I really enjoyed was they have this idea that they have to collect all these rings to get this white energy. And Metron at one point says, at no other point in the multiverse do we see a similar looking character to this White Lantern. Mm-hmm. So he's something specific to this version. So there's something about his power and his energy that's just different from anywhere else in the multiverse. So their initial idea is they have to steal one of each ring and build some kind of contraption that will make all the energies blend together because they want that White Lantern power. And so you think... Yeah, but your initial thought is, okay, well, now we're going to get 12 issues of random fights across the galaxy as they try to steal each ring. Mm-hmm. But instead, it's not. It's snap, 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 snap. They get all the rings. They put it together. They try. It doesn't work. And now they think, okay, now we've got to do something much more difficult. And figure out something different. Like, we thought we had the answer right here at the beginning, and of course this answer doesn't pan out, so now we have to understand that there's more to it. And I like that idea where you have this simple, basic premise, and they jump right to it.
Way early.
Yeah, I think that builds the story a little bit better instead of what I thought that they were going to be doing, where you were going to see, okay, here's an issue of Green Lantern. They're going to be fighting the Green Lantern Corps trying to get a green ring. And then we're going to go to Red Lanterns. They're fighting for a red ring. And then we're going to get a new Guardian.
I think we're still going to get that to a certain extent because, not to spoil too much of this book, but they do talk about gathering additional rings. So I think we're still going to get that. That's definitely going to be part of the story. It's just not going to be the only story.
Right, right. And so that's I like that idea. I also like the things with like Mogo, how he suddenly changes because they've been using him as a headquarters because their other headquarters has been destroyed. So now it looks like this one's falling apart. So it's again kind of these temporary fixes that they've had in the storyline over the last couple of years are all starting to fall apart. And I've always liked the DC. The way that they take the history of the universe, if you look, when they started with Crisis and then it followed through to a lot of other those big events, that they always have that big bang with the giant hand of creation at the beginning of time, and at one point it's the hand of the Anti-Monitor and then they change it and it's one time it's the hand of the Spectre. It's, whoever that hand is, it's always someone manipulating time and energy. I noticed when they showed the hand of creation, this time it's wearing a ring. So it's a lantern, and I'm guessing that's going to end up being Kyle Rayner, the White Lantern, at some point, you know, going back and being the hand of creation. But I noticed he was wearing a lantern ring, that giant hand coming through. But I've always liked the way that they built that that mythology, their own kind of concept, working off of, we're going to take a little bit of this and a little bit of this, and so everything works. Like, everything is part of, if you believe that there's the gods of Mount Olympus, they exist. They're there. You can find them. You can go there. You know, but at the same time, we have angels coming down. We've got Lucifer, you know, coming up from hell. Like, those exist. Those are real. They're there. And so this, taking the new gods and taking that sci-fi bent and taking, you know, Highfather and Darkseid, and they're there. They exist. They're real, you know, in the DC universe. And I've always enjoyed the way that they've kind of worked everything together into that mythos. So that's another thing I enjoy about the series.
I'd be willing to give this another shot. You know, how long is this limited series supposed to I mean, this crossover supposed to last?
A while, it looks like.
Jeez. I'm talking about Act 1, Part 1.
Is it just 1 month?
No, no. I mean, I think Act 1 is 1 month, and then Act 2 is... I'm not sure here. Let me see if I can find out real quick.
Do they have, like, a checklist in the back of this book I didn't see?
Not that I remember.
I was just curious. It made me stop and think, oh, how long is this going to last? You know, talking about, oh, you know, they're not doing it, you know, like one battle for one ring every issue.
I like how they mentioned that it's been a year since they initially fought Relic. Just as far as, like, how
the timeline? Yeah,
timeline.
Yeah, no checklist at the back of the book. They might have published it somewhere else.
Gotta give us those checklists.
Yeah, like Edge of Spider-Verse and Spider-Verse, all that stuff. Did anyone read that Spider-Verse book this week? Dirt, I think this is right up your alley.
I ain't get to it.
Edge of Spider-Verse number 4. There's definitely a horror bent to this book.
Yeah.
And I think this is right up your alley.
You
know, that's all I can say about it. I don't want to spoil too much of it. There's of the Age of Spider-Verse books, this is the one that's the most offbeat. You know, because it has this horror bent to it. You know, the last couple, you know, like one of them was, I didn't read the one prior to Gwen Stacy, but I read the Gwen Stacy one. I read the Aaron Aikman one, which was done by Dustin Weaver. And I read this one, and, you know, this is definitely the most offbeat and most, you know, it's definitely, it may be not an EC comic, but it's definitely, an heir to the EC comic lineage.
All right. What I can find for Godhead is it looks like it's three acts.
Okay.
And each act is a month.
Wow.
And each month it's running through, of course, the various Green Lantern books.
Hmm.
So you've got Green Lantern, you've got New Guardians, you've got Core, you've got Sinestro, you've got Red Lanterns.
I didn't know there were so many Lantern books. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Are they relaunching the New Gods book at all during this time?
I don't know if it's during this or if it's going to be after this, but I know there have been talks about it. I mean, the Infinity Man was supposed to also be setting up for it.
Okay. Well, I guess I just got myself caught up to speed on the future plans of the DC Cosmic Universe.
Did anybody notice the monster variant covers this month for DC?
No.
They have, because it's Halloween month, they have monsters covers. So a lot of these books have a secondary variant cover, and these covers were open orders for your retailers. So if they wanted to order 30 of them, they could order 30 of them. Just like the Batman month covers or the Selfie month covers. It just happens to be monsters this month. So they have these different monsterized variants. If you're...
It's a monster mesh.
Is that Neil Adams?
Yeah, that's Neil Adams.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that one's worth getting just to have because it's an item's artwork that kick ass. It's like zombie Superman eating a chunk of kryptonite.
That's funny. All right. Let's see. Rapid fire, rapid fire. Did anyone read Silver Surfer number 6? Is anyone still reading Silver Surfer at all?
No. I've been getting them, but I haven't read the last.
Oh, you guys are missing out on some fun reading. It's just fun. Without the Silver Surfer and Dawn Greenwood and Earth Girl are traveling the spaceways, and the very first line that evokes a look of horror on the face of the Silver Surfer, spoken by Dawn Greenwood in this issue, is, "Surfer, I'm hungry, find me a planet." And I actually laughed out loud reading that. You know, it made me, you know, like as an old Fantastic Four fan, you know, that made me laugh. And this issue, you know, without delving too much into it, there's a lot of just nice little character, you know, interactions between the Surfer and Dawn Greenwood. And this is sort of the modern take of Alicia Masters kind of teaching Norrin Radd about humanity, you know, that was done in, you know, Surfer's first a couple of appearances in the Fantastic Four. This is sort of, you know, a modern retelling of it with a more modern twist and a more modern female lead who's a little bit more, it's definitely a different take on it. Let's put it that way. You know, I recommend this for anyone that's a fan of just, you know, someone who wants a fun read. There's not all that much superheroing to be done in this issue. It's just a fun read.
Okay. Well, speaking of Death of Wolverine, Black Widow number 11.
I did not read this. I saw your little blurb on it. I think that's kind of cool that they already have, you know, that they have these characters kind of interacting.
Yeah. So Natasha's still on the, well, her lawyer's been kidnapped, so she was trying to find him, which happens in this issue, and she's still trying to figure out who's trying to come at her. She enlisted the help of X-23 for a little bit of, as she put it, she needed somebody who was angrier than she was. For whatever she was doing. And they do kind of talk about, this is after Wolverine is dead, because they kind of touch on it on a page.
Now I think about it, both of these, this issue, and I think 4 probably were supposed to come out at the same time.
Well, that worked out.
I think if the weekly schedule had gone right, or it might have, 4 might have been last week, and then this issue would have been this week. Anyway, continue.
Yeah, well, there's really not much to say. It was just a nice little bit of action between the two. But, yeah, it was pretty cool.
Cool.
And the only one I have to throw out is Legendary Star-Lord number 4. It's Star-Lord versus Thanos. And it seems
to... Is it really? Or is that a fake cover?
They fight.
No kidding.
But yeah. It seems like maybe I need to forget continuity with this when I read it. Cause like I'm sitting here reading that and I'm thinking back to like issues of Guardians of the Galaxy when like they were palling together, they were being best buds.
Mm-hmm.
And
does this play into what's happening in Guardians right now in that they're trying to reveal what happened to Richard Rider?
Maybe.
Oh, okay.
I honestly can't tell because that story's still ongoing. And it's like, I'm trying to remember specific things from this story.
Might cause me to read this then, if what you're saying, you know,
made me more confused. Like, why? Oh, no. Why are they so mad at each other? And isn't Thanos supposed to be? Oh yeah, isn't Thanos supposed to be wrecking shop in New Avengers? Instead of just sitting on a piece of space rock.
Yeah.
In space. chilling. How does he know where to find Thanos? I have questions.
All right.
And Freddie Williams III is on art.
Let's see. I read Figment number 5, which wrapped up that miniseries, which, amazingly enough, if you can actually believe it, ends as a commercial for Walt Disney World.
Huh. Shocker.
Yeah, I know. Crazy, right?
Funny.
It was fine. I think it kind of fell apart towards the end. It started out with a lot more promise than I think what it ultimately delivered with, and I think part of that was just the fact that they had to make it fall in line with the whole Disney tie-in at the end. You know, he set loose, he made this machine that brings your imagination to life. He creates this purple dragon and goes into the world of imagination. His boss finds it, puts it on, and these giant robots come out and basically start destroying London, trying to make order out of chaos. And he's basically got to come back at the end, back into London, and defeat these evil robots that are destroying everything. And he figures out how to do it by creating tools and dropping them on the population so they can pick them up and start taking apart these robots and making them into other things. So it ends with kind of the happy, family-friendly, you know, ending there. And then he creates this warp to go on his next great adventure. And when he pops through the warp hole, he's at Epcot Center. So,
what? You know, this is what that deserves. And
yeah, I was going to say, it really felt like one of those things, like if you're reading an episode of an issue of Avengers Assemble, the kids' book, and you get to the last page and suddenly they're in Times Square and there's a giant Coke logo, you know, behind them on the screen. I mean, that's really kind of how it felt, the placement of everything. Wow. I feel like he had the skeleton of a good story that he was probably working towards, and Disney and the overlords kind of said, well, you got to direct it this way. Hmm. And you got to make sure you end with this. And, you know, that kind of brought it down a bit at the end. Overall, though, I'd say it's more positive. And it's definitely something, you know, my son, who's just the right age for reading a book like this, and this makes him feel, this is not a cartoon tie-in. This is not a toy line tie-in. So to him, it feels like he's reading an actual comic book, you know. So he enjoys reading that as well. So I think it works on his age level.
All right.
I also read RoboCop this week, which finished their first arc. And again, this is tied into the old movie franchise, the original Peter Weller films. It gets a little silly. These guys are running guns through old Detroit, so they end up making massive monster trucks that they're driving through the sewers trying to sneak them through town. And the reason, of course, that they do that is because they have to tie up RoboCop with a chain to the back of the truck and you know, drag him along. So they needed something that was big and powerful, you know, that they could do that with. But that aside, that silliness, you know, out the window, everything else about it, there was a lot of blood and gore. You had some character development going on with Lewis, his partner. You saw how the people of old Detroit are always being manipulated either by the government or by the corporation. I really enjoy the fact that it's structured in such a way that the corporation's evil, but the government sucks too. And, you know, each side is just as bad as the other. You know, no side comes out looking good. The only people that come out looking good are the Joe Lunchbox everyday people who are just trying to, you know, do what's best for their families, as opposed to people greedy with power or people greedy for money. So I think it plays the right notes as far as the original movie goes, you know. But the monster trucks in the sewers of old Detroit was a little silly.
Huh.
That's where that one falls apart.
All right.
But otherwise, I enjoyed it. So there you go. All
right, cool.
Oh, and Walking Dead. Let's talk about Walking Dead for just 1 second. The big here's the spoiler from the last 2 months. Okay, go ahead and hit the spoiler. All right, they found out that the zombies are starting to talk. So you have some new development. They're regaining their humanity, which, hey, it's something new. It's something different, something zombie movies have never really done before until Day of the Dead kind of touched on it a little bit. So maybe this is, you know, just a natural outgrowth of that, except you find out in this issue it's not. Spoiler bell again, please. It's just a bunch of dudes who are skinning dead bodies and then wearing the skins as clothes so that they can hide with the zombies so that they can attack other people and steal other stuff. That's it.
Oh, I wish I had Eclectic's sound effect. Shout out to E. Ooh.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like finally something kind of interesting is developing in the book because so many of these issues have just been boring and dragging on and on. And here's something that this could be really cool, and then it turns out it's not. So I'm back to being disappointed in Walking Dead again.
Goodness gracious.
Like, there was the Fonz was jumping over a shark a couple of years
back. Oh, no.
I kept going anyway.
Oh, no.
The last one I'll talk about real quick is Alex and Ada. I love this series, even though it's technically a relationship book. There's so much more to it because of the idea that she's an android that's been given sentient life. So she's not human, but she is alive, and she does have her own thoughts and feelings. But technically, she's a property and not a person. And this guy is just having the hardest time dealing with these issues of, can I really own this thing? And she was made to be technically my companion, but to me that just feels kind of gross and weird. But at the same time, she has feelings and emotions, and now she's feeling like she's being rejected by him. And so I think it plays with a lot of these moral questions about artificial intelligence and you know, where technology goes in the future. And I just really enjoy the story. The artwork is as beautiful as always. On her own,
cool.
and left Alex, and she's trying to discover where her place in the world is. And I think, of course, there's going to be some reconciliation between them later on, but the story is just playing out. It everything in the book makes sense. There's no surprises in the sense that suddenly someone acts out of character and does something stupid, you know? The surprises just come because of the way other people in the world are reacting to the events, you know, going on with the idea, androids and artificial intelligence and everything else. But as far as you know, the actual story goes, it's just this nice you know, character study and morality play, and it's just super, super interesting. So it's definitely a series that if you've not read it, you definitely need to go back and just at least check the story out and read it for nothing else but to get those moral themes that are running through it, because I think this is, as technology pushes forward, these are things that we have to deal with as a society. So it's definitely a good book.
I'm an issue behind, so I'm going to read, because this was issue 8, right?
9.
9, okay. Uh-oh. No, issue 8, I need to read. Issue 8 is what I'm left on, so that one, and then I'll be caught up. But yes, I've been enjoying the series as well.
All right, anyone else?
I got one real quick. X-Men 20. Let's see. Rachel's pissed. They're still out in space. Deathbird's pregnant. With Vulcan's kid. Let's see. Rachel's pissed.
I read this. That's about all I remember.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I was going to ask her, but I asked after the show. And that's about it. It was just them still trying to figure out what's going on, and you know,
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Clicks of the week.
Ooh, this is a tough one this week. Tough one. Tough one.
Go.
Mine will be Gotham Academy.
No, okay. It's your favorite.
Oh, you're going with Gotham Academy.
Yes.
Wow. I almost picked this one, but I'm not. I am going to go with that Detective Comics.
No kidding.
Sounds like you liked it.
I really did. I mean, like I said, it's not only did I enjoy the story, but I just found myself staring at the artwork, just like trying to figure out what this guy's thought process is as he's laying it down, because every page is just so beautiful. So I just absolutely love it on both levels.
I'm going to go with, surprise, surprise, Guardians 3000 number one. This was a pleasant surprise for me this week. I was not sure I did, you know, when I saw that this book was out this week, I was not sure I wanted to read it, but I gave it a shot, and I was pleasantly surprised by the story that was told. I thought it was very well done. The art, as we spoke about before, while, you know, definitely anime influenced and definitely Joe Madureira influenced, was good. Didn't really distract from the story, served to enhance the story. And, you know, it was a great reintroduction to these characters who really haven't seen much action since the end of, you know, I guess the last time we saw Vance Astro was and Starhawk was in the last iteration of Guardians of the Galaxy before they relaunched it with, you know, like around the time of...
the current book.
Yeah, the current book. So, yeah, Guardians 3000. Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Got some nice variety here.
Yeah, we got one more to go.
Well, I am going to, like I said, I'm going to do two. One, I am going to co-sign with Agent 70 on the Guardians book, because as a fan, fan of the original Recipe Guardians, I enjoyed reading this book. So, and I will continue to read this book.
Nice.
Hopefully it will still go places. But I want to give a non-superhero click of the week.
Oh.
Or Fixing Squad number one.
Yes.
Check that book out. It is pretty cool.
Nice. I'm glad to see someone else have a non-superhero book click of the week.
I need to get back on my non-superhero reading. So much damn Marvel stuff out.
Yes. Yes. I mean, most of my stuff was like the Activity, and now the Activity people are doing the Punisher. So, you know, I need to branch out more and read more non-superhero stuff too.
All right, so that is all for tonight's episode of Compass Chronicles.
Yay!
Make sure to follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDOGG98 and at TheClickNation. Hey, I just noticed my thing went away at the bottom.
Oh, you're watching, who's it?
That's what she said.
A minute, actually.
Yeah. Ah!
Oh, well. Follow at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need.
Woohoo!
At Agent underscore 70 and at PCN underscore Dirt. PopCultureNetwork.com is his website, so check that out.
Yes, and don't forget shop.
Don't forget Vine Comic Reviews.
Hashtag. He's got a couple on there.
I've got like a dozen of them now, I think.
Really? I don't use Vine. I'm going to have to take a look.
It's hard, man. 6 seconds.
And also make sure to go to ColdSlitherPodcast.com, the home of the Cold Slither Podcasting Network. And we'll be back next week. We'll be recording on the very first day of New York Comic Con.
Yay!
Hopefully we'll have some fun stuff to talk about in news.
Yes, absolutely.
I need to look at the panel schedule for Thursday.
God, it's going to be so crazy. So much stuff going on already on Thursday. Just very quickly, we were talking about this off the air prior to the show. I will be attending New York Comic Con. I have tickets for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We'll talk again about it next week. looking forward to this show. I missed last year's because I was not able to get a ticket. This year I was able to get a ticket because I went to Special Edition NYC, so I got tickets before pretty much everyone else. I'm looking forward to this. At the same time, I'm dreading the crush of people. And I've got only one more weekend to prep the books that I want to get signed. So we'll see how that goes.
Cool. So with that, we'll be back next week. We are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Great!